Chapter 4. Violet Knox, now Mrs. Ronald Oringer, editor, born in 1940, came to live with us in 1957. She was, and still is, 10 years later, an enchanting English blonde with doll eyes, a velvet carnation, and a tweed-cupped little rump. But such designs, alas, could no longer flesh my fancy. She has been responsible for typing out this memoir, the solace of what are, no doubt, my last 10 years of existence. A good daughter, an even better sister and half-sister, she had supported for 10 years her mother's children from 2 marriages, besides laying aside something. I paid her generously per month, well realizing the need to ensure unembarrassed silence on the part of a puzzled and dutiful maiden. Ada called her Fialochka and allowed herself the luxury of admiring little Violet's cameo neck, pink nostrils, and fair ponytail. Sometimes at dinner, lingering over the liqueurs, my Ada would consider my typist, a great lover of coup en trop, with a dreamy gaze, and then, quick, quick, peck at her flushed cheek. The situation might have been considerably more complicated had it arisen 20 years earlier. I do not know why I should have devoted so much attention to the hoary hairs and sagging apparatus of the venerable Veen. Rakes never reform. They burn, sputter a few last green sparks, and go out. Far greater importance must be attached by the self-researcher and his faithful companion to the unbelievable intellectual surge, to the creative explosion that occurred in the brain of this strange, friendless, rather repulsive nonagenarian. Cries of no, no in lectorial, sororial, editorial brackets. More fiercely than ever, he execrated all sham art, from the crude banalities of junk sculpture to the italicized passages meant by a pretentious novelist to convey his fellow hero's cloudbursts of thought. He had even less patience than before with the SIG, Signy MD-MD, School of Psychiatry, its founder's epic-making confession. In my student days, I became a deflowerer because I failed to pass my botany examination, he prefixed as an epigraph to one of his last papers, 1959, entitled The Farce of Group Therapy in Sexual Maladjustment, the most damaging and satisfying blast of its kind. The union of marital counselors and catheticians at first wanted to sue, but then preferred to detumify. Violet knocks at the library door and lets in plump, short, bow-tied Mr. Oringer, who stops on the threshold, clicks his heels, and, as the heavy hermit turns with an awkward sweep of frieze robe, darts forward almost at a trot, not so much to stop with a masterful slap the avalanche of loose sheets which the great man's elbow has sent sliding down the lectern slope, as to express the eagerness of his admiration. Ada, who amused herself by translating, for the Oringer editions en regard, Griboyedov into French and English, Baudelaire into English and Russian, and John Shade into Russian and French, often read Devon, in a deep, medium-esque voice, the published versions made by other workers in that field of semi-consciousness. The verse translations in English were especially liable to distend Von's face in a grotesque grin, which made him look, when he was not wearing his dental plates, exactly like a Greek comedial mask. He could not tell who disgusted him more, the well-meaning mediocrity whose attempts at fidelity were thwarted by lack of artistic insight, as well as by hilarious errors of textual interpretation, or the professional poet who embellished with his own inventions the dead and helpless author, whiskers here, private parts there, a method that nicely camouflaged the periphrast's ignorance of the from language by having the bloomers of inept scholarship blend with the whims of flowery imitation. As Ada, Mr. Oringer, a born catalyzer, and Von were discussing those matters one afternoon in 1957, Von's and Ada's book, Information and Form, had just come out, it suddenly occurred to our old polemicist that all his published works, even the extremely abstruse and specialized Suicide and Sanity, 1912, Compitalia, 1921, and When an Alienist Cannot Sleep, 1932, to cite only a few, were not epistemic tasks set to himself by a savant, but buoyant and bellicose exercises in literary style. He was asked why, then, did he not let himself go? Why did he not choose a big playground for a match between inspiration and design? And with one thing leading to another, it was resolved that he would write his memoirs, to be published posthumously. He was a very slow writer. It took him 6 years to write the first draft and dictate it to Miss Knox, after which he revised the typescript, rewrote it entirely in longhand, 1963 to 1965, and redictated the entire thing to indefatigable Violet, whose pretty fingers tapped out a final copy in 1967. E-P-I... Why, my dear?